Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. After our four-hour marathon of the previous week, we are here to have a more standard podcast talking about exciting transfer rumors and surely instructive preseason matchups. But we are here regardless to invade your computer or iPhone with some very insightful Tottenham Hotspur talk. Joining us are my two regular co-hosts. It is Ben Daniels. Ben, how loud are the crickets in Atlanta tonight?
Oh, them boys is chirping tonight.
Are you excited to talk about Tottenham tonight, Ben?
I absolutely am. I think we had a riveting match and some exciting transfer news. Let's get going.
Yeah, way to commit to the bit. Next up, we have our old man podcast here. It is Brian Ashlock. Brian, how excited are you to talk about Spurs tonight?
I'm super excited. I totally watched the preseason match we had against Leighton Orient or Ipswich or maybe some other club that I'm definitely familiar with. And so I will have lots of very valuable insights to share with our listeners.
Great. Looking forward to it. But I think to lead us off, we have to really discuss the most pressing issue, the most important thing happening in Tottenham Hotspur. And that is, of course, the Skywalk. Brian, would you dare to Skywalk at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
Yeah, I mean, to dare is to do, Gregory. And I don't see how you could be a true Tottenham fan and not want to dare to take the Skywalk.
I mean, nothing really says I am a fan of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club like putting on a puffy jacket and a harness and I guess just sort of walking around a roof until they pull you back.
I mean, yeah, you're really tempting fate, and I think you couldn't ask for a better encapsulation.
They probably wouldn't let you die.
Probably.
Well, that's the thing. Tottenham Hotspur, we probably won't let you die. This is the motto we've all gotten dangerously comfortable with, I think, over the years.
Well, it's a good thing this is a podcast that thrives on danger. So now that we've moved past the Skywalk, which... Do you think we're going to, like, that's how we're going to fire managers from now on? They're going to, like, we're going to make them do the Skywalk before every match, and the one match that they aren't coaching anymore, we're just going to push them off? I think you hope so, right, Ben?
I think we should at least try it once on one manager, perhaps see how it goes. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a thing that'll stick, but I think we should just at least feel it out.
I feel like we've got to start using it for, like, signing announcements. Like, stop having them be at the training ground and then, like, have them, like, holding up a scarf on top of the stadium while, like, a drone camera pans dramatically around them. Like, I feel like that's a much better way to announce a new signing.
With some dramatic close-ups of them putting on their puffy jacket and harness.
Yeah. I mean, I think you want to put the puffy jacket style over the harness?
You need a Sting-style bungee jump off the Skywalk into the stadium. That couldn't go wrong.
Unless it's Joe Day, and then it's going to be an Owen Hart-style bungee jump. Right, Ben?
A Joe Hart-style bungee jump, perhaps.
What a transition. So going from one guy whose career came to a crashing halt to another. Oh, God, that's a joke I shouldn't have made. Tottenham Hotspur signed Joe Hart. You know, he's probably going to be our third keeper, although maybe he's going to be our second because there are some rumors that Fulham want to give us a lot of money for Paulo. So I don't know if he's going to be our second or third keeper, but we signed Joe Hart for nothing. He's only making in the realm of $30,000 a week, which is a slightly richer than usual third keeper money, I think, or at least second keeper money. Joe Hart's been kind of washed for a few years. I know what Ben's going to say about this, so let's change things up and get an opinion that I might find new and exciting. Brian, what do you think of Joe Hart signing?
I'm definitely not as bothered about it as most of the internet is. I think in our writers' room and, you know, on Twitter, I think we saw a lot of very strong anti-Joe Hart takes. And I'm absolutely anti him starting a significant number of matches for Spurs. But I don't know. I mean, look, if Jose Mourinho and the rest of the staff at Spurs have identified him as a guy who has leadership qualities and is respected in the dressing room, then, you know, you sign players like that sometimes. And I mean, look, he was available on a free. The salary's maybe a little high for a third choice keeper, but, you know, I think that Mourinho has to get some level of rope from management. Like, you have to give him a little bit. And if us giving him a little bit of rope is you get to sign Joe Hart to be a third choice keeper, as opposed to, all right, we'll spend, you know, $50,000 on a 29-year-old center, or 50 million pounds on a 29-year-old central defender. Like, I like that trade-off a little better. So I'm not that bothered by Hart. I don't think he's going to play significant minutes. I think that if he has a positive impact on the dressing room, it's a fine signing. And, you know, if he makes us lose an FA Cup, then he's exactly the same worth as Michel Vorm ever was. So,
Ben, would you like to unburden yourself for our listeners?
Oh, yes. I would love to unburden myself. So, I mean, I think, Brian, that's exactly my problem is with the whole Jose Mourinho regime is he's a guy who you need to give rope and allow him to make signings. And these are what his signings are going to be. They're going to be a bunch of fucking old douchebags who have leadership qualities. And it's like, I don't like investing any amount of money in that, because that is not anything good for the future long-term health of the club. It is just giving Jose Mourinho a binky to get through the season, which I am not very confident is going to go super well. So the more contracts we lay out for guys that Jose just absolutely has to have, especially after we didn't do that for Pochettino, is something that bothers me. But regardless of, like, the macro issues with Jose Mourinho and allowing him to have any say over our transfer policy whatsoever, Joe Hart is very bad at goalkeeping. Like, yes, he is potentially our third choice goalkeeper, but if the rumors about selling Gazzaniga are true, he is potentially our second choice goalkeeper. And our second choice goalkeeper last season played 18 Premier League games. Now, I think it's unlikely that Hugo Lloris is going to have another major injury this season. You know, you're probably not going to have a situation like that. But, I mean, the only reason you have backup goalkeepers is as an insurance policy. And I know we in America are very comfortable having insurance policies that don't actually cover anything or protect you when you have to use them.
It's the literal reason I have a job.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like paying Joe Hart X number of dollars to sit on the bench and never play. Fine. If he never plays, then great, we got away with something. But the reason you have a backup keeper is they might have to play, and if Joe Hart has to play for any significant amount of time, he's going to be very bad. He was very bad at Burnley. He was very bad at West Ham, like particularly bad at both of those teams, to the point where they did not keep Joe Hart on their roster after he was very bad. So I don't know why we think it might be different for us. All we're hoping for out of this is that, A, we don't need him, and, B, there are some intangible leadership qualities you get out of a third or second string goalkeeper that somehow transmute themselves to the players elsewhere on the field. I don't really get that philosophy, but...
The thing that I will say that I definitely agree with you about is, like, as a, on a macro level, like, it is a little concerning that if we're trying to identify players who have, you know, a certain leadership personality and who are willing to be a third choice goalkeeper and are homegrown, and the best option we could come up with is Joe Hart. I feel like there are plenty of other homegrown, you know, good locker room guys that you probably could have signed for cheaper to be third choice. You know, Rob Green continues to get jobs. You know, I mean, we could have brought Paul Robinson back out of retirement. Like, you know, we could have done something. So I understand that macro level concern. And I think, you know, it would be great if, like, one of the guys in the academy was ready to be the third choice keeper, or that they thought that was ready to be the third choice keeper. But I mean, I think the thing that I'm going to try to pin my hopes on for this is that this signing allows those academy guys that could be the third choice keeper to go out and have, like, actually productive loans, and then, you know, play in League One or the Championship, get real professional minutes, and not be wasting their time on the bench at Spurs because they might be needed in an emergency. So we'll see how that plays out. That may not actually happen, but
you're right. And I think that is a, you know, when I criticize the view of the long-term health of the club, that is something that I didn't mention. And you're right. That is potentially very beneficial to have those guys going out on loan and coming back. And now we have that sort of a long-term young keeper in place. So I retract that part, I guess, a little bit.
Well, I mean, I understand the criticism, signing, though.
That's the thing about this signing, though. It's like, if we just sign, like, not Rob Green, because he's sort of unusually high profile, but, like, you know, if we just sign some schlub who've been slumming it for a couple of years, some English schlub who've been slumming it for a couple of years at the bottom of the table, and, like, you're going to be our third keeper, we're never going to use you, we're going to pay you $20,000 a week, and, like, that's it. It'd be fine. You know, are we going to get something out of the leadership qualities? I don't know. Certainly you're going to get more of a locker room presence out of Joe Hart, for good or for ill, than you would get if you signed, like, Burnley's second string keeper for the last 10 years or whatever. You know, but I think the danger, as far as we see it, and the thing that makes me worried about this signing, such as it is that, like, until, like, what, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, how long has it been? 5 years? I don't know what it's been. But, like, there was a period of time Joe Hart was an excellent keeper. I mean, he was probably overrated, but he was very good at City for a while. And, like, the first game I watched as a Spurs fan, or the game that helped make me a Spurs fan, was that season opener in 2010 where we just absolutely wrecked City, but Joe Hart kept every shot we made out of the box. I mean, he was a very good keeper for a while there, and he, like, had stature. Like, he was England's number one, and people thought he was going to be England's number one for years to come, and then he just fell off a cliff, and it doesn't make, you know, I haven't seen anything that sort of explains it. I don't think there was an injury. You know, I don't know if there was a mental thing. I don't know if Pep just broke him, because it seems like that had something to do with it, but it's not like he went to Torino or Burnley and was any good. I don't know what happened, but, you know, he just broke down in a way you don't usually see keepers who are otherwise healthy just fall apart at. And if there's anything that worries me, it's that, like, some of that prestige is still there, and people are thinking, like, oh, well, he's, like, you know, he was taking roids this offseason and got jacked, and now he's going to be back to his old self. So, I mean, if they're, like, clear-eyed about Joe Hart and they just want someone who can motivate people on the training pitch, like, I don't think we need that, but it is what it is. What worries me is that they somewhere in someone's brain, they think Joe Hart is better than he is, because he has been very bad. I mean, he got dropped at Burnley, and that was a club that should have been able – that's not a club that plays out of the back or does all the ticky-tack of things that, you know, Pep Guardiola wants his keepers to do. I mean, it's just – you know, and if everyone's realistic about who Joe Hart is, then it's fine. And Joe Hart, at a minimum, give him credit. He decided to take this money. I mean, I don't know, maybe Jose made him some promises, but it seems to me he probably could have gotten a starting job somewhere. Maybe it's in the Championship. Maybe it's at a lower-tier Premier League club. He came somewhere where he knows he's going to be behind Hugo Lloris on the bench unless something crazy happens. So you would hope that everybody involved in this, just including Joe Hart, is very realistic about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he came to Burnley as the third choice keeper. Like, they had Nick Pope and Tom Heaton and only played because they both got hurt. So, yeah, I think Joe Hart is comfortable and understands where he should lie in the pecking order. I'm not confident that Jose has the same kind of inclination.
I think that
because he's such a leader and a presence.
Yeah, but, like, at worst, I think that means he should be the second keeper, which is a problem. Because, like you said, worst case scenario, he's starting 20-some Premier League games for us if Hugo gets hurt. You know, more likely scenario is what Brian said, is that he costs us the FA Cup, which is, like, annoying. But, like you said, like, it's nothing Michelle Worm hasn't done, like, four times in a row. So it's just... it's concerning. But the flip side of this that I think everybody is kind of overlooking is, like, I don't think this is just Jose. Like, by all accounts, Harry and Dele are very good friends with him. I would not be shocked if he was very tight with the England boys and they had just as much to do with this as Jose does.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, at the end of the day, I think Spurs internet has spent more time in the last 2 weeks talking about Joe Hart and more tweets about him than we will actually devote to him in the 2 years that he is at Spurs. I really think at the end of his time here, he will have been basically a non-entity. And he hopefully won't have played many matches either.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think if we're buying him for leadership qualities, whatever they may be, and we never have to use that insurance policy, I don't care. I don't care about this signing at all. It's going to go badly. And
I'm kind of where Brian is. It's like, if this is the Binky Mourinho needs, who gives a shit? Like, this is not, it's not going to cost us that much. This isn't going to keep us from signing other players that are worth a damn. You know, like Brian says, it's even better because this means if we have any keepers in our academy who we think are worth a damn, they're going to go get minutes at real clubs. You know, this is a very minimal, if he's just going to pump guys up in training or psych you up on the sidelines before a shootout, like, fine, whatever. I don't give a shit. But, like, yeah, if he's expecting him to start real minutes, that's where it becomes a problem. And who knows? Who knows? We have no other indication of that other than we don't trust Mourinho. And, frankly, there's even less indication to think Mourinho will do this than there is to think he'll boot out a guy like Ndombele, where at least there's a track record of shit like that.
Yeah, and the other positive I think Brian mentioned is that he is homegrown, and the last couple seasons we've been wasting a third keeper spot on a foreign-born keeper, which limits our ability to have a foreign-born player on our roster, and that's just terrible squad management.
I mean, that's so, the only reason Hart's here. I mean,
that's a good fix.
So, well, let's move on to talk about guys who might actually contribute regularly for Tottenham Hotspur. We are recording this, just for clarity's sake, in America on Thursday night. As of right now, Matt Doherty has not been signed from Wolves, but it looks like it's all but
the
done.
Former North Carolina basketball head coach?
Yes, exactly. But it sounds like we're going to get him from Wolves the rumors that we've seen as of the time of recording are about £12 million with about £5 million extra on add-ons. Now for a 28, is he 28 or 29?
He's 28 until he's 29.
Okay, good. Just checking. For a former Arsenal fan, I think that's important to make clear. You know, even for a player that old, I don't think that's a bad haul. But this is an interesting signing. It sort of goes a little bit against the grain of what we've been doing in previous years. But also, I think we're trying to patch the bleeding here. Ben, you have strong feelings on this signing, don't you?
Yes, I have strong opinions on Matt Doherty.
It's
Matt Doherty. Sorry, Ireland. That was horribly
did
offensive.
You start to say Ireland in Irish accent?
Ireland. I'm sorry, Ireland.
God.
Anyway, so yes, there's a couple concerns I have about Doherty. And
so start with, what do you think of him as a player?
Yeah, so he is a wingback at Wolves. And there are kind of questions of like how he's going to adjust to being a fullback and not a wingback. But I do think when you look at the way Jose plays with a very lopsided back line where he has one very attacking fullback and one very reserved fullback, his job won't be that different than it is as a wingback at Wolves. So maybe there's going to be a little more defensive responsibility, but by and large, it's going to be a fairly similar role. The thing that Doherty does very well is he is a goal-scoring fullback. And if anyone has ever played, you know, Fantasy Premier League, you all know that he is an absolute stud that you want to have on your team because fullbacks don't generally have that kind of goal production. You know, I think it's a very atypical kind of job for a fullback. If you've been used to Pochettino and his fullbacks, Danny Rose and Kyle Walker at their prime were not expected to score. But, you know, we've talked a lot about the style of Jose Mourinho and how much it involves limiting play between the boxes and emphasizing play on either end. You want to make sure that they don't get in yours, and you want to do as much damage in theirs as possible. Anything that happens in between is irrelevant. So Doherty is a guy that does not give you a lot of ball carrying. He's not going to carry the ball up the wing and dribble a couple of guys. He doesn't really do that at all. He's a pretty good assisting creative type, lots of cutbacks and things like that. He's not he's not Trippier. He's not playing amazing crosses into the box. He's not.
He does create havoc in the final third, though, right?
Yeah, his big thing
beyond is just his goal scoring.
Well, the big thing is he shows up in the box and around the box as an extra attacker, and so he combines with players around the box. He shows up on the back post on a lot of moves. You know, he'll get in the mix. He likes to do the old Gareth Bale classic, cut inside and rip one. You know, so in terms of what Jose wants a wingback type fullback to do, he does it. He is good at being a extra value attacker from a position that doesn't normally give you goals. The other side of it is he is only pretty good defensively. He's tall. Jose likes a tall fullback. He's 6 feet. I think he's okay in, as a one-on-one defender. I think he's worse as a defender than Serge Aurier is, but he's not going to make the kinds of calamitous mistakes Serge Aurier does. So
this goes back to the discussion we were having a few weeks ago. Would you rather, do you want a guy who's a little worse than Serge Aurier, but he's not going to keep conceding penalties and free kicks right outside the box? Like, is it, you know, we're about, so it's interesting. We're going to test this theory out.
Right. I think he's worse than Aurier in a lot of ways, but the ways that he's better than him is that he is not a calamitous disaster waiting to happen in the box, and he gives you a much more concrete attacking contribution.
So this is an interesting thing about Doherty. I think my guess has been, if you had a major criticism of him, it'd be like, this guy's, we're buying him in his prime, if not maybe slightly past it. He's 28 until he's 29. This is a much older player than Spurs usually buy. So on the one hand, this is a Spurs team that needs to get younger, even though I think it's fair to say we have been getting younger over the last few years. Like, assuming Ndombele is still around, he's like 23. Lo Celso is not even that. You know, I mean, we've been buying fairly young players. I would argue, and again, I think this depends on where you see the Spurs squad, one of the sort of failings of our transfer policy, and I don't know if this is Pochettino or Levy, but I would argue one of the big failings of our transfer policy is that we just didn't fail to plug some holes where we could. With, like, you know what, this guy's going to be here for 2 to 3 years. He's just going to, like, we're going to make do with this. Like, it's going to fix a problem for the short term. And I would argue, like, if we'd done a little bit more of stuff like this, it might have worked. Now, whether you see him as plugging a hole or just being, like, a fullback under contract at Tottenham Hotspur, which is also plugging a hole, I guess, these days, I don't know. But it's just, you know, it's that flip side of, we're probably not going to recoup this potentially £17 million investment, but on the other hand, he might just fix this. He might fix the position for a few years, and we might just not have to worry about it. So maybe that's worth £17 million. I don't know. Brian.
I mean, I just think that, like, Aurier signing in general was a plug a hole at fullback kind of signing. Like, he was on the outs at PSG and he was available, and he was not a young guy. I mean, he's not, I think he's 28-ish right now, 27, somewhere in that range. So it wasn't like he was, you know, a young guy we were taking a flyer on. This was a guy who'd been at a top club for years and just, you know, had kind of worn out his welcome. So I don't know. I think the Doherty signing is interesting to me because he is a player that if he was about 3 years younger, you'd be like, yeah, it's a really good signing. But he's 28 and he kind of is what he is. And you bring him in and he gets probably, what, a 4 or 5 year contract. And like you said, Greg, I mean, there's maybe not much potential sell on value to him at the end of that deal, or, you know, 3 years into that deal. And I don't know. I just, like Ben said, I don't think he's enough of an upgrade that it makes a lot of sense, even if the price and the wages and everything are kind of reasonable. In if this was a normal summer, I don't know if 17 million in a, you know, the COVID transfer period makes any sense. But, like, you know, if he'd have been available for 17 million last summer, you'd have probably bitten someone's hand off for it. So I don't know. I think it's okay, but I think I would prefer we were looking at some of the other younger options that we've been linked with before. You know, I mean, again, he's tall. he's homegrown. Despite not being English, he's homegrown. So, I mean, that is another point in his favor. But is that worth passing on someone who is potentially a solution at right back for, you know, a long time, and then also a, you know, something you can cash in for 30 or 40 million pounds?
Well, that's in 5 years. Do you want to spend like I don't know how much Max Aarons is going to cost this summer, but, you know, it's someone who has not looked, you know, I would say not looked as convincing. It's, you know, it's, I don't know. It's like, the question is, does that option exist, and is that option realistically achievable? And I don't know.
Right. I mean, the way I would be like thrilled with this signing is if we were getting this guy and we were getting a guy like Max Aarons also. And that those are our two right backs. We have a guy who's at like just past his peak years as a fullback who can get us through a season or two, and a guy who we can kind of bet in and see what he develops into. And then we have a kind of plan for the long-term future of the club. You know, I think buying a 28-year-old Doherty 2 years ago when we were actually like competing for titles and stuff is the exact kind of signing that I would have been desperate for. Is like, you have to buy now, you have to invest now. We have a squad that is all entering their peak years together, they're all performing at the top level. We just need to fill a couple holes on the pitch and we could actually make a push for a title. I don't think that's where we are right now, and so to me, only turning Aurier into a guy that's slightly better than Aurier, and I think enough better than Aurier that it's like fine in a vacuum, but at best, we're going to get a good season out of him this year. And I don't really know what our upside ceiling is for this season. Like, do I really think we're going to challenge for a title this year? Like, absolutely not. Is it going to be the
difference? You don't think we're going to beat Man City with Lionel Messi on them?
Well, I think Messi's going to go to Spurs.
Obviously.
So, you know. And another, you know, post-peak player that I just have no thought for our long-term. I'm really walking all over a bit that Nathan Clark did on Twitter today, so I apologize. But no, so, you know, again, like maybe if it's the difference between top four and top five, like, yeah, that's a good signing. But, you know, if you look at our transfer business as a whole, it's Joe Hart, Højbjerg, and Doherty. Like, that's not like, there's no like real knockout signing. We got like a real functional guy who could be better than he was at Southampton, a washed keeper with leadership potential, and a fullback who has been very good but not great, and who's only going to get worse because he's old. You know, he's going to be 29 this season. He's got 3 years left on his Wolves deal, so I would be surprised if we could get him for only three more years at Spurs. We tend to buy players with five-year contracts. Because Levy likes to have them on a long term so that they doesn't, you know, he cannot raise their wages for a while. And so having this guy locked up till he's 34, that makes me a little uncomfortable. Again, it's, if it turns out we're doing a lot of other business too, you know, as a piece of that business, I'm not really bothered by it.
I mean, it's like a realistically, I think. You look at the potential business we have. We're talking about probably buying a left back, right? Like Castagne or somebody.
No, I think we were looking at him as our right back side.
Okay, but we've been linked with a few, Serkin, or however you say his name, Serkin or whoever. But, or anyway.
Serkin already plays for us. You're thinking,
yeah,
Celik.
No, I'm mixing him up with the Celik guy.
Celik, who's also a right back. Like, we've only been linked with right backs. We have not been linked with left backs. We have Sessegnon, Serkin, and Ben Davis, and it seems pretty clear to me that that's the core we're going to roll with.
Okay, so we've bought our fullbacks. I think probably the only other thing signings you're going to see are probably a backup striker, who I think just by definition is going to be older, because that's who you're going to get to replace Harry Kane, which I'm actually fine with. If we're going to buy an older guy to be a striker, I think that's fine, because who else is going to want to just sit on the bench all the time? So the only other issue, and I think this is where the real wild card comes in, is like, are we selling Ndombele this offseason? Because I think that's the only way we're making other major purchases, both because of the hole he's going to create in our midfield, or at least our midfield core, and in terms of, like, in theory, we have some money we could go spend on another midfielder. I don't know. There have been links to him in Italy. We've talked about them. As of this podcast, the only thing we know about Ndombele is he's not being called up to the French team because of COVID. You know, we don't have any stronger links than the last time we talked that he is actually going to leave Spurs. So who fucking knows what's going to happen there? But yeah, I think it's going to be a very mild window. You know, we're going to get rid of a Danny Rose. We're going to, you know, make some mild sales. But
I mean, that concerns me. I mean, if you look at this team, we are not obviously a top four squad. And if we're not, we need to be ambitious in the transfer market and become a top four squad. And holding serve with guys like Callum Wilson and Matt Doherty and Joe Hart is like, that's not doing it.
Well, I guess the plus side is we've been linked with Leon Bailey. We've been linked with guys like Leon Bailey, too, who would be, you know, I mean, I don't know that we need another attacking winger, but
I guess what I'm saying is we need to make a knockout signing. I mean, pretty much every summer, a team needs to make a great signing, because if you're standing still, you're going backwards. And we've seen what that looks like. Just a couple years ago, we did nothing, and we went very backwards. You know, we had two major obvious holes in this squad going into the season, and it was defensive midfield and right back. I think everybody would have pointed those two as like the key pieces we needed to buy. And you would like an ambitious club to fill those spots with star players or guys who you believe are undervalued but could be star players. Højbjerg, I don't think is that. I think they think he's that.
Like, they think he's undervalued and a star player. I think they probably believe that.
Yeah, I think he was definitely undervalued. I don't think there's any world where he's a star player. I'm willing to be convinced because I do think he has a lot of talent and a lot of ability. But, you know, if you look at the universe of midfielders out there, it's not like we got a fucking gem in Højbjerg. We got a guy who might be better than we think. And then Doherty is a guy who is, again, 28, pushing 29. It's just where are those, you know, home run signings gonna play? You know, we don't really have a lot of obvious upgrades on the squad. I mean, football is a weak link sport. You're only as good as the worst guy on the pitch. And we have obvious worst guys that we should have been trying to make a lot better, and we've only made kind of better. And I just don't know if that's gonna be enough. And I hope I'm wrong, and I hope maybe we complement these signings with guys like Leon Bailey or whoever in other positions that are, you know, going to be guys you can dream on for the future. Guys like Bergvine was last year. Like, I would love more signings like that. And I am concerned as the transfer window goes on and the signings we make, we aren't doing that. So as much as I think some of these guys are fine in a vacuum, the overall picture makes me anxious.
Well, I think one problem with this window, whether you're inclined to use an excuse, is like a window where we need to rejigger the team, both from a turnover standpoint and we have a new manager standpoint. Doing it during the summer of COVID is probably not the best time to do it. Every team but Chelsea seems to be operating in a very conservative fashion, I would say. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it doesn't seem like anyone else is really balling out this offseason, except for, I guess, maybe Barcelona, because God knows what's going to happen to them. But it just seems like such a conservative window, and I just don't know who's available, who's being signed. I mean, that's part of why I don't think Ndombele is going to end up going anywhere, because just, like, you're not going to get value for him during this window.
Yeah, I mean, again, you look at what Chelsea's doing, and they're dropping just a shitload of cash on players. Like, some people do have money, you know, PSG, Barcelona, the major clubs have money and are spending it. Man City spent
$40 million. Doesn't have money. I mean,
well, they might. Who knows what's going to happen with Messi?
Well, okay, then they might have money, but
I mean, like, Man City spent £40 million on Nathan Ake, who's, again, barely okay as a center back. People are spending money. I mean, Chelsea are coming off of a transfer ban, and they realize, like, they, as good as they did last season, they finished top four. If they want to actually compete at the level they want to compete at, they need to fucking spend money. And obviously Chelsea have more money than we do. And they also have, like, the Eden Hazard funds they never got a chance to spend because of the transfer window. So I understand that there's, like, limitations here for us compared to other clubs. I just would love to see more.
No, I mean, the frustrating thing is it doesn't seem like we're making that ambitious Heung-min Son. You know, we're not going after that, like, exciting young guy, which, you know, you might like to see us taking advantage of the plight of, like, certain French teams or what have you this offseason. But, you know, I don't know. That's what I hate about transfer dealings. It's just, it's such an opaque process that, like, we'd like them to do better. But especially when you see all these obstacles, it's hard to know, you know, what makes sense, what was out there, what are we trying to do? And, you know, given that we're all suspicious of the new manager, it becomes even more difficult. Brian?
Well, I think one of the things that we've talked – sorry. I just think one of the things that we've always talked about on this show is, like, we want the club to have, like, systems in place for, you know, these sorts of – to be able to find value in the transfer market. Because we all understand that we are not Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea – We're on a different financial playing field. And, like, yes, we have a new stadium, but we can't put fans in it right now. And we're still paying it off. And, like, will that stadium allow us in, you know, 5-10 years to, like, level the playing field a little bit? Yeah, absolutely it may. But we also have to be successful during that time. And the way that you are successful is, you know, the way that we have been successful in the past, where you find guys that are either very good and undervalued or who have incredible potential to grow in value. And, you know, we found it when we signed Gareth Bale from Southampton. We found it when, you know, we've signed guys like Christian Eriksen on the cheap, and then we failed to sell him for a significant profit. But, you know, like, we have done this before. We have identified guys who are very good and can both contribute and also provide value to the club when we sell them. And it doesn't feel like that's what's happening now. So I understand what Ben's saying is, like, yeah, in a vacuum, some of these signings are fine. But, like, let's be honest. Højbjerg, he's young, but as a defensive midfielder, is he someone that's going to provide a crazy amount of value to you, you know, if you sell him 4 years down the road? Probably not. You know, Doherty has no sell-on value, essentially, depending on what the contract you sign him to is. Joe Hart obviously has no sell-on value. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm trying to have, like, small club mentality here when I'm thinking about things like like sell-on value. But, like, we have to think about what we can, as a club, grow players into. Like, Spurs are not a club that signs ready-made superstars. I mean, before the show, we were talking about clubs that were doing that, and that's just not our thing. Like, even with the guys that we've signed that were high-profile signings, Lo Celso, and Ndombele, those guys, they're not, like, world... they're just not, like, big superstar names. Like, if you were listing the best midfielders in the world, you're not going to be listing the two of them. They're very good, and they're players that have the potential to get to that level. But, like, we identified them as the guys we wanted that are in the age profile that we wanted and that we could afford, and we signed them up. Like, that's not what's happening this summer, and it's a little concerning.
Right. I mean, like, there's definitely tiers in world football, and, you know, a club like Lyon, despite their success in the Champions League this year, are a lower tier club than us. And we can prize a player like Ndombele away from them. We can take a Lo Celso from a Real Betis. You know, we're not taking a superstar from Barcelona or Real Madrid. Like, that's just never happening. So the ability of the club to identify players peaking at bad clubs or players who are maybe, like, post-hype in a way that Christian Eriksen was and maybe slipped through the cracks a little bit, that has been so key to our ability to get guys that take us to that next level. Like, a guy like Heung-min Son, who, honestly, I think by virtue of being Asian, was a little undervalued in the market, despite his goal scoring in Germany. And he's become, you know, I think categorically one of the best players in the Premier League since we bought him. And those are the kinds of signings that we can't stop making. And I struggle with this because I don't want to give Jose Mourinho the transfers that he wants. And then I will be very nervous and skeptical, you know, if he handpicks the next Heung-min Son for us. But at the same time, I also accept that, you know, we have Jose Mourinho for good or ill, and we can't let that stop us on our long-term plans for the club. And, you know, next season, there's going to be other guys to replace. You know, Toby Alderweireld is going to be another year older, probably another center back. Hugo Lloris is only getting older, you know? Like, there's Lucas Moura, as much as we hate him, like, whatever, he still has, you know, another year or two left in his legs before we, like, desperately need to get rid of him. But again, it's a guy we know we have to replace. There's a lot of guys like that around the squad. And kicking the can down the road and having to replace five of them at one time, you know, I don't see next summer as the season we go full Chelsea and just go apeshit spending money. You know, so we kind of have to do this year by year. And we didn't do it 2 years ago. We did it a little bit last year, and we're not doing it this year. And it's just, you know, I just feel the squad aging around us, and it scares me.
Well, I think it's a really hard thing to do. It's a really hard thing to do to get, like, a balanced transfer window where you balance not only improving your squad in the short term, but also improve it for the long term. And I think last summer we bought on Ndombele and Lo Celso with the idea that that would improve us in the short term. But they've kind of worked out to maybe be more long-term signings, Lo Celso being the exception there. But, like, I think this summer has to be that balance. You've got a Højbjerg who obviously you're signing to play right away. And if you sign a guy like Doherty, you're signing him to play right away. So I think if I had more confidence in Spurs scouting and analytics departments, I would say that you've signed these two guys to play right away, and that then you will also then turn your attention to, you know, finding young players to be a backup striker or a young player to play an attacking midfield or another young left back or whatever. But I don't think any of us have that level of confidence in sort of the scouting and analytics departments to think that those sorts of things are going to happen. And so, you know, in the same way that we're all concerned with the Joe Hart on signing on a macro level, I think we're just concerned with transfer policy in general on a macro level. And what is it we're looking for? Like, it just looks like we're looking for homegrown players that are, like, big personalities. And, like, that's cool, but, like Ben said, sign some good players. Like, sign, you know, not that Højbjerg isn't any good, but let's sign some transformational talent. Let's sign some players that you can look at and go, yeah, this guy's going to be really, really good in 2 years. And I understand
We signed Bergvine in January.
Yeah. Look, and so, I mean, so look. It's not
like it doesn't happen at Spurs. Like,
sure. And I mean, look, it's not Heung-Min Son transfers don't grow on trees. Gareth Bale's, like, they don't just come, like, along every summer. Like, I get that. I'm not trying to be unrealistic and be like, oh, we should just sign the greatest teenagers in all of world football and, like, make that happen. Like I get that that's not a thing, but, like, if you have a good scouting and analytics department, you can identify players that fit your team and fit, like, your aging profile and get them in. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I guess what frustrates me about it, and I know, I'm sorry to, like, just keep being a dead horse, but if you look back at Pochettino's squad that took us to the highest heights we've been in 60, 70 years, you look around that team and see where did we get them from. You know, like Kyle Walker and Danny Rose, they were young players at championship clubs that we bought with upside potential. Dele Alli, we bought from League One. Eriksen from Ajax, again, for like 12 million pounds. Vertonghen, fairly cheap from Ajax. I don't know, who else? Eric Dier, we got as like a weird center back midfielder from fucking Portugal. Like, the team that we built that got us where we were and are was built on signings like that. And it's just so frustrating to see us seem to ignore all those lessons because it fell apart rather than realize, though those things worked really well, what do we need to add to that to make it a holistic thing that works better? You know, sign a guy who's ready-made like Doherty and also find the next hot, you know, James Maddison from the championship. Find a guy, like, those are all pieces of a successful transfer policy, and it feels like we're just sort of reacting very wildly, vacillating from one thing to the next just because the last thing didn't work out, you know, for the last 2 years, despite seeing it work as well as it did like 3-4 years before that. Anyway, I'm sorry. We can talk about anything else. I apologize.
Well, I mean, you look at that and you look at how last year went, especially like, you know, look at the situation we're in. Ignore that we have Mourinho now. And, you know, I think obviously in an ideal world, especially Daniel Levy would be like, yes, let's go buy some young talent that can mature, bet into the squad, or just is going to be contributing in a few years, or we're going to be able to sell them for a ton of money in a few years. And I think that's ideal. But, like, you look at where we are and, like, how we got in that situation we got in. And a lot of it was we weren't, I would argue, we were, for one reason or another, we were too picky about refreshing the squad. And I think you have to make a very, you know, if you're Spurs and you're looking at this offseason, which I think we can all agree is probably more difficult to sign players than usual this offseason, whether or not that should stop us is irrelevant, but that's probably a fact. I think almost certainly a fact. You know, you've got to make this calculus of, and I don't know how much, you know, I'm sure Mourinho liking more experienced players does play into this somewhat, but it's like, do you want to patch some holes or do you want to, like, you know, kind of do this thing that we did for a few years, which is let the perfect be the enemy of the good and just, you know, look for these players who might not be available, who might not be in positions of need, and sign them. There's that kid from QPR who I think Spurs were on, and then, like, he ended up going, I think it's the West Brom, is that who he ended up going to, for $19 million, which is like, you know, should we have spent that much on him? Sure. Is that kid probably ready to start for Tottenham Hotspur? No. My guess is that guy's not ready to start for Tottenham. So you've just got this tricky situation of, like, there's a way we should build the squad, but there's also just the realities of, do we want to live through what parts of last season looked like, which, regardless of what you think of Jose Mourinho or how Pochettino ended his time, certainly a big reason a lot of last year went the way it did was because of squad depth and how we built our squad. And, there, you know, I don't know how to square sort of taking what's available and living with it versus, like, you know, really building for the future. Now, a lot of this plays into what Brian said about, like, how much do we trust our scouts? How much do we trust, like, the systems that we're building to sort of put these guys in place? And, you know, not much is probably the answer, even though we are turning up guys like Bergwijn who aren't on radars or weren't, you know, that signing sort of came out of nowhere. It's just, you know, on one level, I'd love to go sign guys like Jan Vertonghen every year. But on another level, like, you know, not Joe Hart, but, like, you know, a Doherty or a Højbjerg, like, you know, it's fine so far as it is, if only because I'm sick of just living through this, like, horseshit every season where we're, you know, signing guys who can't cut the mustard. And some of that is, you know, some of that's injuries, some of that's bad luck, but some of that is we've signed some younger guys who just weren't up to snuff, and we're relying on younger guys who aren't up to snuff. And I think, you know, he's not signing, but I think Harry Winks is kind of an example of that, where, you know, that's a guy who a couple of years ago we thought was going to be like a foundational player for the squad. And, you know, I think the most optimistic view of Harry Winks at this point is he's a good squad player for Spurs. And it's just, it's a tough balance to make. And, you know, especially this summer, I'm not sure how much of a problem I have with us being a little more pragmatic than we have been, considering the hole we've dug ourselves in. Now, of course, like you said, Ben, the problem with this is, like, you know, it's, you know, I can't come up with a good analogy, but, like, you know, how much do you solve this problem by not changing course? But at the same time, you know, do we want to have, like, 3 or 4 years of the wilderness? I mean, clearly we don't, because we signed Jose Mourinho. But are we willing, or as fans, are we willing to sort of sit through three or four years in the wilderness to sort of reload the team in a process that may or may not work?
Right. And I mean, I totally agree with you. And I guess that's why I said we need to do both. I think the thing for me that's going to kind of turn on is what happens with Tanguy and Ndombele. You know,
yeah.
If we did buy last summer Lo Celso and Ndombele, and as these, you know, transcendent, squad elevating young talents who have the potential to be absolute world beaters. And if the signings we're making around those margins are with a view to allow these guys to do their thing and whip ass, like, I feel a lot better about it. But the rumors that we're kind of like chasing Ndombele out of the club, and, you know, I am not unwilling to acknowledge that Ndombele has not been an unqualified success at Spurs. Despite thinking he is obviously talented, and even despite his limited fitness, was a clear net plus to the team when he played. If we do chase him out and don't replace him with a similar caliber player and make yet another functional get a guy in midfield kind of thing, I'm going to lose my mind. But if we either keep him in the squad and get him playing well, or replace him with a similar caliber, promising, mega upside young star, I will feel better about everything. And I think that piece looming so large over everything that we're doing, I think makes it really hard for me to accept the other transfer business. And so I guess I'll reserve judgment until that gets resolved.
So this has been a hard podcast on Ben, you know, clearly pushing a lot of his buttons. So I'm going to make him happy. I want to talk about something that I know is near and dear to his heart. It looks like the manager he hates the most in the world might be doing the thing he loves most in the world, which is converting a midfielder into a right back. And it went really well, or to a fullback. It doesn't necessarily have to be right or left. It's full. Ben is an equal opportunity midfielder to fullback lover. It looked like it worked pretty well. It's we had a preseason friendly against Ipswich, and Kedson played right back for the whole match. Now, Ipswich is League One. They have not played since March, I think. But I think universally, Kedson was praised for his performance in this match, as far as you can tell. Like, it's a League One team. But, Ben, how excited did this make you?
I mean, you know, just on a theoretical level, it was all my dreams coming true. On an actual practical level, yeah, he was pretty good. I mean, I think he looked more like a right back than he ever looked like a midfielder. You know, I think we see guys who have a very weird hodgepodge of talent, and they get stuck in midfield for whatever reason, because it's kind of like, well, you kind of do a bit of everything in midfield. But that's really wrong. Fullback is a really great parking ground for guys like this. I mean, what Jensen does really well is he dribbles well, he progresses the ball well, he can't pass for shit, so why would you ever want that guy in midfield is beyond me. You know, it was against Ipswich, so he didn't really have to do a lot of defending. But again, he carried the ball upfield really well from right back. He, you know, is a natural kind of attacking player with those instincts. So he found himself in advanced positions, combining well with the players in front of him. I would be happier with him as a backup right back than I will be as him as a backup central midfielder, based on that one performance against a very bad team that hasn't played in 6 months.
Was there anything in that performance, like, again, we can account for the fact that it's a shitty team, but was there anything in that, like, was there an aspect of that performance that gives you optimism for this could be a thing that could work against better teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, his skill set marries very well to a traditional fullback role. He carries the ball well. He makes himself a good outlet for passes. He's fairly press resistant. He can combine well in attack. He does good fullback things. We didn't see him really have to play defense at all. And that's kind of an important part of being a fullback.
Depends on the team you're playing for.
That's right. So, I mean, you know, that's a huge question mark over this potential positional transformation for him. But the things that he did well enough. And regardless of the opposition he was playing against, you know, we've seen him go on runs and dribble guys and do things like this in midfield against better opposition. We know these skills exist for the guy. He seemed to have good positional instincts of how to move up and down the flank as a fullback, despite never having played it before. So, there's something to dream on there.
Brian, how do you feel about Ben and Mourinho being on the same wavelength?
Concerned on a number of levels, honestly. Look, there were other things other than Gedson at right back that were positive to take away from the Ipswich match, which, as I mentioned earlier, totally watched. We played a lot of the kids, and like, I understand that it's preseason, but you know, to see guys like Churkin get a look in and some of the other young players to be included in the team, I think that's good. And you know, I don't know if Jose will actually follow through and use some of these guys in, you know, these early Europa qualifiers, which, you know, one of the draws is on Monday, you know, or if we'll see these guys in League Cups or FA Cups. I have no idea. But, you know, it was good to see some of the young kids get a look in. And, you know, as I said, from my very detailed viewing of the match, I thought they all played great.
I mean, at a minimum, they're getting loans and shit. So that's like a huge positive. It would be extremely funny if Jose Mourinho does a better job managing our youth system than Mauricio Pochettino did. Like, that would be an incredibly funny outcome.
Hey, I always said. I actually did watch the match, so I'll give some canned quick thoughts.
I said I watched the match.
I know. I heard you. I thought Dennis Serkin actually looked very good as a left back. Again, opposition, you know, taken with a grain of salt, but he looked like a left back. He had good instincts. He played the ball well. He defended well. He did left backy things well. It's weird because like, we kind of played. It was fairly hard to discern whether we were playing with wing backs or with that lopsided back four, because Sessegnon was playing not as left back. Ben Davis was also playing at the same time, and I think we played Sessegnon largely just as a left winger, left forward. He scored a goal. It was a good finish. The build-up to get to that goal was very clumsy, and any good defender in the Premier League would have taken that ball off of his foot before he got the shot away. But he did finish well, so that's nice. Other than that, I didn't really get a lot out of Sessegnon, and I remain Sessegnon skeptical. Dele looked right at home against League One opposition. He's definitely found his level again. Jack Clark came on in the second half, and he had a quiet start, but he looked not bad. Like, he put a couple dangerous balls across the box. We had a 16-year-old striker in at the time with the amazing name of Dane Scarlett. I just want that kid to be a superstar with a name
that's
like that.
That's a poor name.
Yeah. I mean, I went six to midnight when I saw him come on the pitch. But yeah, that, you know, he almost got on the end of it, but, you know, again, it's 16, so I'll give him a break. But Clark did some neat things that you might, you know, hope that there's still something left in the tank with that.
I'm honestly perplexed as to why Spurs fans gave up on Clark. Like, clearly his last season was mismanaged, which is a combination of Spurs and Leeds not doing their homework. And I don't want to, like, undersell the damage that might have been done by, like, him just not playing for a year and wasting a season, essentially. But, like, this kid's still super young. I think he's under 20 still. You know, by all accounts, very talented at Leeds before that. Has not played a ton of minutes, so there's not a ton of tread on his tire. You know, there's still a ton of tread on his tires. I mean, you know, I think it's very clear to me this guy needs to get a decent loan to an upper-tier championship or lower-tier Premier League team who's going to give him minutes. So it's probably a championship. I just don't understand why everyone thinks we wasted that money just because last year we, I don't know, admittedly sort of fucked up his loan, which I think had as much to do with Leeds as us.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Well, just on the Clark thing briefly, Liz, I mean, I think he's the kind of player that you can keep around and play, you know, 10, 15 matches, even if he plays only as a sub. I think his development is probably better served to play some minutes at Spurs. And I think we have rotationally, especially with the way matches are going to be this season, I think we have minutes for him. And I mean, if we sell somebody in the attacking midfield band, if somebody like a Lamella goes, then obviously I think it makes sense to keep Clark around. And, you know, again, a young English kid, somebody who we did take a flyer on, somebody who wasn't at the club last year. Maybe he is the proverbial quote-unquote like a new signing guy this year, and you know, he does some things.
I mean, we can get very lucky, and Jack Clark and Sessegnon could both turn into real contributors, and suddenly our transfer policy looks genius because we already had all these promising young talents just waiting in the wings. I think the thing with Clark is not just the Leeds thing, which was a clusterfuck, where we loaned him to a team that had too many loan players and so couldn't use him. We loaned him to QPR in January, who were not good, and he played, I think, 5 or 6 times all season, or all second half of the season for them. And that made people kind of wonder, well, if he's not good enough to get into this very mediocre championship team, you know, what value does he have? You know, I'd be happy sending, he's 19, I'd be happy sending him out on loan again. We just have to find a club that is going to play him. And if that doesn't
exist.
Yeah,
and he didn't play, it's worth remembering, Jack Clark didn't play because he sucked. Jack Clark didn't play because Leeds fucked up their policy and they can only play so many loanees. So that was the
reason.
But
he also didn't get minutes at QPR. That's the, I think.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, you're right, but that's also like guy hasn't played for half a season. QPR is probably doing us a solid because we're gonna sell them Luke Hamus or whatever. Like that, I can buy a little bit. But you're right; he didn't get minutes. He didn't force his way onto the pitch at QPR.
Right, and I guess if you want to look uncharitably at the Leeds situation, you kind of have to ask why did this guy, who was enough of a contributor with them the year before that we thought we should buy him, why was he not prioritized as one of those loan signings to be reintegrated back into the team? I think that's a reasonable thing to ask. But again, I don't think it's
worth considering. Tottenham Hotspur is not the only team that mismanages their roster on occasion.
Oh yeah. No, totally. Again, I'm trying to explain why people maybe got sour on Clark this quickly. But yeah, I was very surprised watching him in this game because I was one of those people who were like, well, if he can't get into QPR, that's probably the end of this kid's run. Yeah, there are some other young players who played. Our new signing from Wigan, Alfie Devine, another 16-year-old, played midfield for a minute. He looked competent, but 16. You know, I don't think we could expect anything from him anytime soon. But
well, one player that played that I was kind of surprised that we saw was Juan Foyth, and I think we'd kind of talked when we did our show with the Extra Inch that we thought he was on his way out. Like, it looked like the links to Leeds were solid.
Oh,
and we,
yeah. Like,
and we were all a little disappointed about it, you know, because, like, he's young and he could be good. And, you know, like, there's something there when you look at Juan Foyth. You're like, this kid is obviously talented. You need to iron out some of the kinks and stuff. But I think he has some skill. And, you know, he played. He started, I believe. And, you know, or I know because I watched the match. He's good. I think it would be silly for us to give up on him like completely. Like I said, when we had our show with the Extra Inch, I think it makes more sense if we want to loan him to Leeds and Leeds are going to play him match in and match out in the Premier League. I think that's a good move. I think it's smart, but like I don't want to give up on him. I think he's still a talented player.
I don't trust Foyth. Like, he has directly cost, not in like, he was bad in defense, like, directly cost us too many games that make me nervous about him. But you're right, he's a talented player, he's good. I'll tell you what I've noticed was not just that game that he started, but, like, he's been in a lot of our preseason publicity. Like, I think he was in a few pictures of the new kit. He's been in all the Skywalk pictures. You know, I mean, he's just been in so much of our preseason stuff. Now, maybe he's just like around in a body making up space and we just tend to recognize him where, you know, we're not going to recognize like Alfie Devine or whatever. But like, I've just been surprised how much of him we've seen in the preseason. Like, and just in terms of like games and publicity, like I've been surprised for a guy who is like on his way out. It has, you know, I have been a little surprised by it.
Just trying to rebuild some value before we sell him.
It could be. I don't know. Now, I would like to point out, Ben, that despite your claims, as we were recording this podcast, Marca has linked us to Reguilon, from the left back from Sevilla. So we have, in fact, been linked with left backs. So
vaguely. It was but Tottenham Hotspur are one of many clubs keeping tabs on him.
You
we'll
said
fucking
we were
see.
Linked with left backs. I don't know. Would you take him?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Not Ben Davies. Not whoever.
No, he's good. I would do that.
Well, here's hoping. So I think that wraps us up. Brian, you got any final thoughts for our listeners? You know, maybe some final observations from the game?
I don't know. I mean, I think we've talked about the game enough, honestly, that I don't need to go into exhaustive detail on my opinions. Well, I'm just really looking forward to Monday's Europa League draw. Really hoping that we can draw, like, Lokomotiv Plodiv or Bate Borisov or, you know, somebody who's probably not Bate Borisov. I think they're in the Champions League draw. But, you know, somebody who I've never heard of in a country that will be extremely difficult to get to. I'm sure they'll be fun.
It'll be fun to see if we can actually complete our Champions League qualifiers, because or our Europa League qualifiers, because we might not be allowed out or back into the country after those games.
Maybe we'll get to play a club in like Greece, maybe in Mykonos.
What could go wrong?
No, nothing could go wrong. There's certainly not any high profile things that have gone wrong in that part of the world recently.
Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y.
Ben, do you have any final thoughts?
I want to say for Harry Maguire, slab lives matter.
Jeez.
Sorry, everybody.
Where can people find your terrible jokes on the internet?
You can find me at ComradeUSpurs on Twitter.
You can find my newborn-induced hallucinations on Twitter at skipjack0079. That's 0079. And for Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.